Good morning again. We are here on June 8th with the Minnesota Court of Appeals, June 8th, 2022. Again, just a reminder that we are holding arguments today by zoom.gov, and I want to address a few matters before we begin. Oral arguments are recorded by the court. The audio recordings of these arguments are generally available within 24 hours on the Court of Appeals page at the Judicial Branch's website. I also note that our appellate rules prohibit anyone from making an audio or video recording of oral argument unless they have received the court's permission at least 24 hours in advance and have agreed to comply with the specific conditions established by the Minnesota Supreme Court. With that, Marshall, will you call the next case before us this morning?
The second case this morning is A22-0174. Courtney Ann Hoke, appellant, versus Alexander Carson Hoke, respondent.
And counsel, it's my understanding that we only have counsel for appellant present today that will be making an argument. So you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. And there is a clock in the upper left-hand corner of your screen. So please pay attention to that. I ask you to please introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument so the recording is clear and identify the party that you represent. And I think other than that, if you have any difficulty with the technology, please just let us know if you're hearing any echoing or you can't hear us. We want to make sure we hear from you. So with that, counsel, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, my name is Christopher Kadom. I represent the appellant, Courtney Hoke, in this matter. To say this is a little bit of an unusual path to this hearing today kind of understates that this is the first time that I am appearing in the Court of Appeals without opposing counsel. And as you're aware, opposing counsel is generally very happy to point out mistakes and things that I have maybe forgotten, and I don't have that. So I'm going to do my best to kind of anticipate where the court wants me to go and the issues as I see them. But of course, if there's something that I'm missing or the court wants to focus my time on, I'm happy to do that. So with that said, I was once told by a judge to keep it short and sweet if I feel like I'm winning the case. And so that's what I'm going to do here today. We're asking for three forms of relief, and the first one is we're asking the court to issue an order reversing the district court's order, which dismissed my client's petition for an HRO. The second one, and this one is not in my brief, and it's just kind of a request that I'm making informally, and that is for the court to strongly consider issuing a published opinion on this issue. There is a case outlined in my brief that I think is directly on point. That's the Belland case. And I noted that it came back up to the Court of Appeals and the decision came out on April 22nd, so just a month and a half ago, again, kind of reaffirming what they said in the first case. But the Belland case did not cite a precedential opinion out of the Court of Appeals or anywhere else. And so right now in Minnesota, we don't have that. And I think it's important. I personally am seeing this a lot more often in my practice, way more often than it should be happening. And I guess the pandemic maybe plays some role in courts trying to control their dockets, but I think it's important that the judges in our state have very clear guidance from this court that petitions shouldn't be simply denied or transferred to a different court, because I think that's what should be done. And then the final thing I asked for in the brief is that we ask the court if it has the power, and I can't find the answer to this, and I don't know if you do, but to consider issuing the ex parte HRO now to assist my client. It's been over a year that she's been kind of bounced around trying to get this relief. And then, of course, we have the very unusual conduct of opposing counsel in their failure to respond in any way, and then the delay that was caused by waiting for their brief that, of course, never came. So it's been a long time, and my client desperately needs the safety and security that comes from harassment restraining order. So just a couple of housekeeping issues I do want the court to be aware of. First one is I'll be referring to the HROs. It's HRO 1 and HRO 2, like I did in my brief. I hope that works. And then I noted in preparing for today's hearing that the date of the petition for HRO 2, the actual date that appears on it, is the wrong date. It says January 20th. And it should say January 10th. I was able to confirm that with the court. Unfortunately, I don't have access to a register of actions like I typically would because this is a confidential case. So I didn't have that at the time of the brief, but I caught it in preparing. So hopefully the court doesn't follow that error. So that brings us to my argument. You'll note in my kind of introduction to my brief that I talk about the standard of review. And of course, it's always an important and incredibly confusing part of this process. And the reason I think this is a de novo review is because I'm asking the court to look at the fundamental question, which is whether or not a district court even has discretion in this statute. Our contention is the court does not have any discretion to dismiss or transfer a meritorious case in which somebody requests a hearing. So that's why you'll see in my argument that I say it's an over-review, because that's a question of statutory interpretation. For the application of the statute to the facts of the case, that, of course, would be abuse of discretion, as your honors know. And we'll get to that in a little bit. I think it's pretty clear there was an abuse of discretion here.
Mr. Kadem?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to address that issue because I understand where you're coming from in terms of your argument that you think it should be de novo review. But ultimately, I think the way I see it, it seems like the overarching issue is whether or not the district court abuses its discretion. And the district court can abuse its discretion any number of ways. And one would be having clearly erroneous factual findings, but another would be erroneously interpreting the law. But it seems to me that your argument is underneath the overarching abuse of discretion. In other words, it's kind of a nested standard of review. So if I'm interpreting your argument, I think the way I interpret your argument is that you're saying the district court abused its discretion because it misapplied the law or misinterpreted the law. Would that be a fair way of framing it?
I think that is fair, and I think that is part of the argument. I think the direct argument I'm asking this court to consider answering in a published opinion is whether the court, a district court, has any discretion under the statute. And I think that's a question of interpretation of the statute itself, because we see throughout 609.748 the use of the term the court may. It's very fairly consistently used. However, with respect to this narrow issue of what a court can do when it receives a petition, the laundry list of things it could possibly do, I think it's very narrow by statute, which is that the court must order a hearing if the petition has merit. And so that's why I think there's two parts to this. The first one is what is the range of things the court can do based upon the interpretation of the statute? And then the second thing is, did the court abuse its discretion in doing one or more of those things? And we do see kind of one or more of those things happen throughout the history of this case. So
I want to follow up on that quick question, Mr. Kadem, and sure. Certainly appreciate your request, including to consider whether or not it should be precedential opinion. And I certainly don't mean to put you on the spot, but I want to follow up on that point. What would you advocate to be a syllabus point or syllabus points to address the issue, the concern that you have?
I think it would probably be specifically addressing what the court's options are when it receives a petition for relief under the statute.
So in other words, is your position that if the district court hears, or if the district court is presented a claim that has merit, that the district court must hold a hearing? In other words, it can't send it off to another court?
Precisely.
Okay, and I'm just kind of talking out loud here, and I certainly appreciate your thoughts on this, but would there be situations where it might make sense for a district court? Let's say there's a related appeal, or I'm sorry, not a related appeal, a related hearing that the court wants to consolidate that hearing with. Let's say there's another HRO in another case, and the court wants to send it to the other one to consolidate it in the interest of judicial economy. Would the rule that you, I just want to make sure that if you're advocating for a particular rule, are there times where that may not make sense?
I think that's a good question. And under the statute, I think the answer is fairly clear. And I think your phrasing of that also would be my answer to the question. In your phrasing, the court is consolidating. It's taking two cases and it's running them together. It's having a single hearing that may address multiple issues. And I think that's perfectly fine. That hearing is then occurring. I don't think it's ever appropriate for a court to dismiss an HRO and not allow a petitioner to seek the relief they're requesting, and relief that, frankly, by law that's been established by this court, my client has a right to that hearing. And I think the statute and the legislature, very clearly in the way it is written, has taken away that discretion from the court. It has taken away the court's ability to kick this thing down the road or for whatever reason believe that a different court is better suited to address the issues. And I think that is clear based on the fact that the legislature uses must for the hearing portion of this, but uses may when it gets to what the court can do after that hearing. So, and this court has consistently held that a district court may order an HRO upon a party proving the basis for of harassment, but it need not. There is not a must. And there are a number of reasons why a court could decide not to issue that order. And so that's, I think, the fact that the legislature changes between may and must in this instance is very clearly taking that power away from a court. If the court wants to consolidate it, certainly. If the parties want to agree or stipulate to some other course, great. But I don't think a court can do it as it has done in this case, and frankly, many cases in Minnesota, because it has a feeling that it's better suited somewhere else.
In this case, was there an ongoing family court proceeding?
There was, yeah. So the dissolution matter was filed, the best I could tell, was filed the same day as, and I don't know which was filed first or which was filed second, but the dissolution was filed at the same time.
Well, the relief, so the relief under the HRO statute is much more immediate than any relief that you could obtain in the family court. Is that fair to say?
Precisely. And I think that's the biggest issue with putting this into a family court file. You don't get immediate relief. And frankly, the relief that is provided is toothless. And we see that in this case. We see that with when Ms. Houck's first HRO was dismissed and told to go to the family court file. She did, received an order prohibiting her soon-to-be ex-husband from entering her home and doing other things. And he did it anyway, which is why the second HRO was filed in part. And once again, the court sent it back to family court, and family court said, I'm not even going to grant you a hearing on your contempt motion. So not only is the relief under the HRO statute a right as established by this court and by statute, it's immediate and it has teeth and it's enforceable immediately by law enforcement. It secures protection for people. And family court does not secure that protection. And the family court's ability to issue orders, they certainly issue orders and they certainly expect them to be followed. But when they're not, this process is frankly the one most people rely on, even if they're in the middle of family court and something happens or an order isn't followed. So, yes. So by kind of the summation of all of that is I believe the statute is overwhelmingly clear. I think that the case, the Reyes case that we talked about directly addresses this, but it isn't published. And so we think a precedential opinion, the Bellin case, would be appropriate. And we believe that my client's request for relief is appropriate. It should be granted in this case. But let's talk a little bit about merit, because that is part of the statute. Two sentences after must, there is the limiting language that says by statute the judge need not grant a hearing if the case is meritless. Again, we think the answer to whether this petition had merit is crystal clear. I would note that the statute is pretty clear that it is made to be user-friendly for self-represented litigants. The minimal showing that is required under the statute to show to have merit is clear on its face, and it's clear in the case law that basically, as long as my client has pleaded each element necessary for harassment, that she's entitled to a hearing or possibly an ex parte order.
There's nothing.
Think there's any question that she's done that.
There's nothing in the trial court's order that suggested that the claim was meritless, is there?
Exactly, I agree. And that was going to be my last point. If we really are focusing on the issues in the case, we don't need to get to merit because the same as in Bellin, frankly, the court didn't do any analysis. It didn't make any findings and it didn't say it was meritless. And so if the court is satisfied with that fact, I need not waste time arguing that any further, frankly. We believe the merit is clear on its face, and the court didn't hold that it was meritless. So it wouldn't be a basis for the court to do what it did anyway. So I kind of some final points. I would note again that, you know, my client did what she was directed to do by the court when she filed HR 01. That was ineffective. She filed HR 02, was told to go back to family law court again. And that again was completely ineffective. And so she
apparently there was some stipulation. About
it was stipulated
an injunction.
That's correct. And he violated it.
How did that come about?
Well, when we were not granted relief within the HRO file, the first one, we filed things in the family court file, and through those processes, there was a negotiated settlement. And that turned into a stipulated order, and he violated that, which is why the second petition, the one that we're here on, was filed. And the district court, rather than looking at the merits of those allegations, more or less said, hey, this was already addressed previously, which wasn't factually true. And even if it had been addressed, certainly the prior instances of harassment could be used as context to evaluate the new instances of harassment. So it wouldn't have been grounds anyway. Oops, I see I'm out of time.
I have one extra question, if I might.
Please.
If this was an ongoing family court matter, I would suppose that at the time that you brought the petition for HRO petition, that you would even have been precluded from asking for that for more emergency relief because of ICMC. Is that true?
I think that's an interesting question, and the way courts are applying the rules of ICMC procedure has been a little bit inconsistent in my experience. But I think technically that is true. You're supposed to have your ICMC hearing before you can bring motions for relief. So,
if you couldn't petition an HRO because you had simultaneously or just previously filed a family law petition because of ICMC, you'd be in trouble, right? There'd be no place to go.
That's right. We'd be completely without relief. Yes.
Judge Reyes, do you have a question?
Nope. Just thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your arguments today, Mr. Kadem.